The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm delighted to be joined on the telephone by Lou Burney. He's out in Oklahoma City, and he's got a new book coming out. It's called November Road. Welcome to the program, Lou.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Lou, this is quite a story. How'd you get the idea for this?
The inspiration for this novel, or at least for the main characters where it all started, is my mother, who passed away about 10 years ago. She grew up during the Depression. She was very poor. Her parents died when she was a young teen. She never had any opportunities. She didn't even dream of going to college. And at the same time, she was one of the most intelligent, resilient, curious people I've ever known in my life. And so I think at some point a couple years ago, I was going through some old photos, family photos from before I was born. And I just started thinking, what if my mother had made a different choice in her life? What if she'd taken a different path? And as a writer, that intrigued me. And I just sort of, I wanted to follow that path and see what happened.
Are you saying that your female protagonist is a little bit of your mother?
Yeah, she's definitely inspired by my mother. At some point she became her own person, the character did. But definitely my mother was involved in the process early on.
The central theme in your book, historical theme, is the assassination of John F. Kennedy in Dallas back in November of 1963. And supposedly the Warren Commission resolved that it was a single assassin up there in the Texas Book Depository, Lee Harvey Oswald, who was then conveniently assassinated himself by a guy named Jack Ruby. It's all pretty slick, isn't it?
Well, I will say this. I did a ton of research on the assassination, and I'm a big believer in artistic license, and I knew I was going to make some stuff up, but I wanted to make sure it was plausible. And what I discovered in my extensive research is that the facts are as incredible as any of the theories are. And so when you talk about the Warren Commission, it's a fact that the FBI and the CIA both withheld information and stonewalled the Warren Commission. It's a fact that they were rushed in their investigation. It's a fact that, for example, John F. Kennedy's brain, after the autopsy, disappeared from the National Archives and was never found again. So, I mean, there's lots of plausible scenarios about what might have happened in Dallas, and I decided just to take a run at one of them.
Kennedy's brain is missing?
Gone. Never been found.
I never heard that one. I think it was last seen on the grassy knoll.
one rumor is that his brother Robert absconded with it in order to hide evidence of his brother's various medical conditions. That's one rumor or theory.
I see. Well, it's sad to think that his brother Bobby, his attorney general, met the same fate 5 years later, and it's hard to believe. I guess I remember the Kennedy assassination. It's hard to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was that incredible of a sharpshooter. Let's talk about your fictional version of what might have happened without giving anything away.
Right. In my fictional version, the person behind the Kennedy assassination is a New Orleans mob boss named Carlos Marcello, who is a real historical figure. And he had an intense hatred of the Kennedys. He was also the most powerful and dangerous mob boss in America at the time, and a guy who knew how to keep secrets. I mean, Carlos Marcello was the one mob guy from that era who did not die a violent death, who ended up living to a ripe old age and dying of natural causes. And so for me, Carlos Marcello made a lot of sense as the person behind it, because he was smart enough, he had the resources, and he had the motive to do it.
Huh. I, I thought you made him up. I didn't realize he's a real guy.
Yeah, most people in America had never heard of him back then, and still a lot of people don't know about him. But I went to college in New Orleans at Loyola University, so I was familiar with the story of Marcello, and I dug more and more into it. And he was a mob boss who other mob bosses had to ask permission before they came onto his territory. That's how powerful he was. Very smart guy, and he had this great. I didn't put it in the book. I should have. But he had this great sign in his office that said, three can keep a secret if two are dead. And I thought to me, like, that's the guy who would be behind this, and we will never find out what really happened.
That's a very inspirational thing. Was it, like, woven into a sampler on the wall? Or
I like to think so, yeah.
You're sitting there in a meeting with the guy going, okay, maybe I shouldn't tell him any secrets.
Or don't tell me any secrets.
Lou Burney joins us. His book is November Road, and it's just coming out. In fact, we're recording this before the book is released. Your protagonist is a guy named Frank Guidry, and he is an amazing, conflicted, charismatic kind of guy. Tell us about him.
Frank Guidry is a lieutenant in Carlos Marcello's organization in New Orleans, and he's a fixer. He's this charming, likable guy. For me, it was a great character to write because he's completely amoral, but he's not necessarily a killer. He definitely is responsible for some very bad things, but he's a guy who's sort of walking the tightrope between good and evil in some ways.
All right, so the story begins, and it's right before Kennedy is shot. Set the scene. We actually have two scenes. There are two stories taking place in separate parts of the country, and they're going to eventually mesh together. Set the scene.
Frank is living his best life. He's happy. He's sleeping around with a lot of different women. He's single. He's got money. He's got tons of friends. He's influential. And then one morning he wakes up to find out that Kennedy has been shot, and he knows something about that, that suddenly he realizes is very dangerous to know if you're someone who works for Carlos Marcello. It's the crime of the century, and Frank has information that makes him suddenly a target for the most dangerous man in America, and he has to go on the run fast.
Meanwhile, in Oklahoma,
the other main character is Charlotte, and she's a world away in a small town in Oklahoma, and she's a wife to a drunk husband, and she has two little girls and an epileptic dog, and she's basically keeping the family afloat. She's working full-time. Her husband's not useful at all, and she's stuck in a life that she doesn't want to have. She's been in this small town her whole life, and she doesn't want her daughters to grow up in this sort of situation that they can't escape. So when Kennedy is shot, that proves a different kind of trigger for her, that she realizes that she needs to change her life. And so she takes the little girls, takes the dog, and hits the road as well.
Speaking of triggers, Lou, you have another major character who actually is my sentimental favorite, and he is a relentless hitman. I love this guy.
I'm glad to hear that. He's one of my favorite characters. That's Paul Barone. And I think in every good chase novel, there's got to be a great antagonist, someone you dread coming after you. And so that's sort of how I focused on Paul Barone, who's Carlos Marcello's number one hitman. And he's detailed to clean up all the loose ends. And so he's after Frank. And once Frank and Charlotte meet, he's after all of them. And Barone is a killer through and through. And for some scary reason, he was really fun to write.
He's so relentless, and he never stops. And when we finally get to the closing moments of his performance, wow.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad it worked, because that was a tricky one to pull off, because he's very relentless, but I also wanted to make him dimensional and complex in interesting ways without sort of undercutting his menace. And so I tried a lot of different versions of how that played out until I finally hit on one that seemed to work.
Lou Burney joins us. His new novel is November Road, and he's getting ready to hit the road. The book hasn't come out yet. He's joined us on the telephone in Oklahoma City, where he's resting up for what looks like it's going to be a grueling road trip. You're going to be as tired as Barone by the time you're done.
I think so. I think my publisher is trying to kill me so they don't have to pay me the rest of my contract, possibly. But it's also a great, great opportunity. I love touring just because I get to meet a bunch of people, and people always have great stories, and eventually those stories or pieces of them work their way into one of my novels. So I look at it as a way to promote the book, but also gather information for the next one.
Is this your third novel?
This is my fourth novel.
Okay. Tell us about yourself. Talk about your previous work and how you became a writer.
I studied journalism in college, but discovered pretty quickly that I was better at and more suited to making things up than telling the truth all the time. So I come from a family where, you know, storytelling is really valued, and if it's not exactly true, that's not so important. What's important is you're making people, you know, turn the page or listen or laugh. So I went to graduate school to learn how to write fiction, and my very first short story, I sold it to The New Yorker, which is a really good magazine, and I thought, wow, this is going to be easy. And in fact, it was anything but easy, because after that, I wrote a novel that got rejected everywhere, and I wrote another novel that got rejected everywhere. And I was teaching, which I loved, but that was also hard because I'm teaching creative writing when I'm not really succeeding at it myself. And so eventually I just sort of drifted away from fiction and said, all right, I guess I can't do this. But at one point I was like, you know what, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to write another novel. This is what I love to do. And so that's what I did. And that was in the crime genre, which something clicked for me in the crime genre, that you can do anything you want as long as there's a crime. And to me, it gave me a certain structure and also freedom that I needed. And I felt like after that, I sort of found my groove.
You got a story published in The New Yorker right out of the gate. That's just absolutely unheard of. That must have just ruined you for a while.
Well, it didn't ruin me until I started getting my novel rejected and rejected and rejected. I mean, so, you know, I kind of always knew it was going to be a tough road, but I didn't quite realize how hard the crash was going to be. I mean, it was about 10 years where I didn't publish a word. And so that was a hard kind of period where I'm feeling like I'm not very good at the one thing I'm good at. And that's a terrible feeling. Mm. So, you know, I feel grateful about everything now. I feel like the path I'm on, you know, it's like it was worth it. And I'm really just happy to be writing novels that resonate with me and with readers.
Lou Burney joins us on the Book Nook today. His book is November Road. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world for 60 years, since 1958. Lou, I have not read your previous books. I plan to, because I absolutely love this new one, and you are such a literary writer. I read a lot of crime fiction, and I wouldn't describe most of it as literary. This is definitely a step above.
Well, thank you. I think the great thing about the crime fiction world is there's so many different voices that you can read something that's really plot focused and intense, and you're just dying to know what happens next. And you can read other stuff like Megan Abbott or Ivy Pakoda, where the language is rich and you're sort of driven along, you know, sentence by sentence. So I kind of love being able to write a character like Frank Guidry, where language is a part of his arsenal, but then I can switch to Barone, who's very tight and hard boiled and noirish. And so I kind of love that you can do a lot of different things within, you know, the one big tent.
Mm. Well, we've had Megan and Ivy on this program. In fact, I would have had Ivy on for her most recent book, but she only had a cell phone. Drat.
Oh, how dare she? It's a wonderful book.
Yeah, it really is a wonderful book. I love that book. That's a classic L.A. novel.
I think so. I think it's one of the great L.A. novels. I think it's one of the great American novels, too. It's just it's a wonderful, wonderful novel.
I agree with you. Lou, I wish I had a dollar for every time Don Winslow has shamelessly promoted November Road on Twitter. I could retire. What's the deal? Is he your agent?
I got some dirt on Don. I'll leave it at that. I know some things about Don that I'm applying pressure and leverage on him at every moment.
Uh-huh.
It also helps that Don is an incredibly generous writer and human being who supports a lot of other writers. And it's not just me. There's people over and over again who he's lifting up and giving a hand down to. And I think that's just one of the great things about this community is that everyone is so supportive.
I agree. Lee Child has got a rep for doing the same thing and promoting lots of people. And you guys are also kind of like on the same team, aren't you? Tell us about the Story Factory.
Yes. In fact, I got my agent through Don. I followed Don on Twitter because he's a brilliant guy, and I love Don's novels. And I think my agent retired about 3 years ago, and I happened to tweet something at Don saying, like, loved your new book or something like that. And Don tweeted back and said, oh, by the way, my agent really likes your work.
Oh.
If you ever need an agent, you should let me know. And it was literally, I think, the week my agent had retired. So I was like, hey, Don, you know what? I need an agent. And so I got on the phone with Shane Salerno of the Story Factory. And within 10 minutes, I was sold. I was like, this is a guy who is passionate about writing and passionate about writers and willing to go to the wall for a book and an author. And that has been proven to me over and over again over the last 3 years. It's been a great experience.
Shane is involved with a lot of film and TV stuff, right?
Shane's actually an incredibly accomplished screenwriter.
Okay.
With some great credits and great projects, and he's a brilliant writer in his own right. So he's doing this less out of a desire to be an agent than to help writers and promote books. And so it's coming from a place that I find very wholesome and exciting. You know, it's like this is the kind of support every writer dreams of.
Well, I've had Don Winslow and Steve Hamilton and Adrian McKinty on the program, and Shane knows how to pick them.
Yeah, he's great. And Meg Gardner is another one who's a fantastic thriller writer. I love Marcus Sakey. He's got a great eye for crime fiction, I think.
My guest is Lou Burney, and the book is November Road. Let's talk a little bit more about your female protagonist. Let's talk about her personality, because it's definitely a winning one.
I'm glad to hear that. The character Charlotte, to me, was always one of my favorites. And through all the revisions, she didn't really change as much as some of the other characters did. And I think partly because she's inspired by my mother, but partly because she just sort of was not afraid to take center stage in every scene she was in. And so I love her voice. And to me, the key to her character as well was her relationship with her two daughters who are 7 and 8 years old. And everything she does in the book in some ways is about them and for them. And that I found very appealing and it resonated with me on a deeply personal level. And plus, I'll add one other thing. I love her sense of humor. Like, I think to me that was a key for her too. I think she's a very wry, funny character, and I think that's why she and Frank hit it off so well, is they can share this sense of humor.
Was your book before this The Long and Far Away Gone?
Yes.
I have not read that, but I hear it was very well received. What is that about?
It's about two cold cases. It's a mystery. A guy who is a private detective has to return to his hometown and for a different case, and he reopened some old wounds. When he was 15 years old, he was working at a movie theater where it was robbed and six employees were murdered, and he was left inexplicably alive. And that's sort of haunted and tormented him his entire life. Like, why was I left alive? And so he starts digging back into that case. And then the other side of things is a woman who lives in this city who, when she was 12, the same summer of the movie theater massacre, her sister, her older sister, who she idolized, vanished without a trace from the state fair. And so for her entire life, this character has been haunted and tormented by the question of what happened to my sister. And so she starts digging into that cold case as well.
Mm, I'm going to dig that one up. Is that out in paperback then?
Yes.
Okay. Who's the publisher on that one?
That's William Morrow as well.
Okay.
All my books have been from William Morrow.
Okay, great. And William Morrow is an imprint of HarperCollins. Lou Burney joins us. His book is November Road. What's the process for you? Are you someone who writes every day? Are you a guy who writes first thing in the morning? How do you do it?
I write almost every day. I take Sunday off usually, or half a day on Sunday, but I definitely have to get up first thing in the morning, put on pants, and get out of the house. Like, that's what gets me started. I would be a disaster if I stayed home and tried to get up. I go to a local coffee shop here where I've been working for about 5 years, and they know me. And I just sit there and I write for most of the morning. And then I come back and usually write for a few hours in the afternoon as well. I'm a slow writer, so it's less a question of discipline than just I'm inefficient, so I have to spend more time working.
What about the dog, Lou? I didn't hear you mention the dog.
What dog?
You don't have a dog, Lou?
Oh, I do, yeah. What about my dog? He just walked into the room.
You didn't mention the dog. The dog came in the room going, "You're not talking about me, man."
I know. I didn't know if that came through. My dog just walked into the room squeaking a toy in order to let me know that he needs to be paid attention to. Thank you for noticing that. I felt bad. I thought you were going to yell at me.
Is the dog rolling over? No, no, no. I don't yell at people. Was the dog rolling over on his back?
No, he's turned away from me. He's facing away. He's pouting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, smart dog.
No, no.
When you talked about getting up in the morning and putting on your pants, I pictured you walking the dog first thing. That's what I pictured you doing, not going to the coffee shop.
No, you know, that's a good point. But I walk my dog in the afternoon, late afternoon every day, and that's when I solve a lot of story problems. Like, somehow, like, that act of getting out of the house, being out with him in the world, away from a pen, paper, or laptop, I tend to solve kind of the story problems at that point of the day. So it's a huge part of my process is walking the dog.
Do you take the same route every day?
Yes.
And what kind of problems do you solve?
Oh, you know, if it's like, okay, I don't know how to get this character from point A to B, or this doesn't make sense that he would shoot her or she would shoot him, or this entire third act is too slack, there's no tension in it, or that's the sort of thing that, you know, bigger picture stuff. Usually not character stuff, usually it's plot stuff that I can figure out while walking the dog.
I see. Lou, a lot of writers that we have on the program are passionate about their craft, and yet they don't really feel like they can be full-time writers. A lot of them have other jobs, day jobs, academic jobs, et cetera. Do you have a day job?
I do. I do some teaching. It's not a full-time day job, but I teach part-time in the low residency MFA program at Oklahoma City University. And I also teach a course at the University of Oklahoma. So I do get some teaching in, which I really actually enjoy that quite a bit, because it's just a different way of engaging my mind and also reminding myself of, like, what writing is about, like, what's important. Because that's what I'm trying to teach my students. Like, this is what's important craft-wise, and it reminds me, you know, every day what's important.
And apparently you're working on another book. Is this something you're allowed to talk about? Are you one of these superstitious writers that doesn't like to talk about what's in progress?
Yeah, I'm one of those.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of you.
I know. I don't know what it is.
No, I get it. I totally get it. It's like you could totally change your mind, right? Dump the whole thing.
If my publisher is listening, no, I will not ever change my mind or dump this. It will be finished and greatly resemble the synopsis I turned in.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they're not listening. How could they possibly be listening, Lou? Even after I email them and tell them to listen, they won't listen.
Don't do that, Vic.
Okay. No, they always want to know. And I've worked with your publicist on a number of projects. And in fact, she got me an interview with Don Winslow for his most recent book, which I was very happy about, because I'm assuming the book you contacted him about 3 years ago was The Cartel.
Right.
And I never could get him for The Cartel because that was on a different imprint. And they kept saying, oh, no, he's not available. He's not available. And then your publicist got me an interview. And I'm like, I don't get it.
She's an amazing publicist, I will say that.
She's persistent. She actually stays on the project. A lot of publicists, you contact them, you say, yeah, I'm interested in an interview, and then that's it. You know, I don't ever hear back from them.
Interesting.
Well,
interesting.
That's the life of someone trying to interview authors. It's complicated. But I'm really glad I got a chance to interview you. And I give Don Winslow all the credit because I follow him on Twitter. And I'm sure he's probably tweeted about you today. I mean, the guy is – he's as relentless as Barone.
And it is deeply appreciated. I mean, it makes me laugh sometimes, but because I don't deserve it. Like, I mean, there's a lot of writers better than me, but I thank my lucky stars for people like Don Winslow, who is so supportive to other writers. And Lee Child and others, you know, it's like if there's ever some fluke where I get to be at that level, I will absolutely do the same thing.
And I cheated. You know, I didn't hear your dog with the squeak toy, but I saw you post a picture of your dog on Twitter. I think it was yesterday.
Oh, really?
I think he
literally walked in and squeaked the minute you said that.
Yeah.
Or right after that. It's so funny.
Yeah. You did post a picture of the dog, didn't you?
I did.
Uh-huh. Looks like a sweet dog.
He's very photogenic.
All right. So we have just enough time to ask you, first of all, when you're writing, do you stay away from stuff in that quote genre, or do you keep reading stuff in that genre? What kind of stuff do you like to read? What are the books you've read lately that you really, really enjoyed?
Oh, I read everything. I never stop reading. When I was writing November Road, I did tend for a while not to read anything written since 1963 because I was trying not to have contemporary voice interfere with sort of the period voice.
Oh.
But no, I read everything in the crime genre. I read all kinds of fiction. I read all kinds of nonfiction. And, some books I've read recently. I loved Laurie Rader Day's latest book, Dark Skies, I think it's called.
Oh.
I'm probably getting the title wrong, but it's Laurie Rader Day, a fantastic novel. I'm rereading Jessica Knowles' fantastic novel, The Luckiest Girl Alive, and her new one since then, The Favorite Sister, is really great as well.
Jessica Knowles? You say Jessica Knowles?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, K-N-O-L-L is fantastic.
I don't know her. Okay.
And I'm reading, let's see, I'm really looking forward to Steve Hamilton's new one. Dead Man Running looks fantastic, and I'm dying to crack that open.
Is that the new Alex McKnight? Or is that, okay, yeah.
I believe, yeah, right.
Okay.
And then Sarah Grand's new novel, The Infinite Blacktop, is fantastic. So those are some off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm leaving important people off of that.
Do you get galleys sent to you for blurbs?
Yeah, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And actually, I read Michael Harvey's Pulse, which I blurbed, was a fantastic book.
Uh-huh.
That's another one that was really good, Michael Harvey's Pulse, yeah.
I like him. Chicago guy?
Yep.
Yeah. Is he still on Knopf?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I can't remember who the publisher is. I want to know. You know, it's HarperCollins.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Echo, I think.
Okay, yeah, Echo. All right. Well, Lou, I can't recommend November Road highly enough. I think this is going to be one of the big books of the fall, and I hope you have fun on your book tour.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Vic. I love the questions and the conversation, and I really appreciate you making time for me.
Thank you so much. The book is November Road. Lou Burney wrote it, and you heard about it on The Book Nook. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.